Our next case is 12-2122, In Re IA, a minor child. For the appellant, Ms. Powell.
Good morning, Madam Chief Justice. May it please the court, Mr. French. I am here for Ian. I would like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal, if I may. The legislature set up a structure for juvenile sex offender classification in Ohio, and that's contained in sections 2152, 82 through 85. And these statutes set forth four main components of this juvenile sex offender classification system: which kids are mandatory and which kids are discretionary, when the hearing should occur, what information is to be considered at this hearing, and then whether the court's decision or order may be revisited or even discontinued. And this structure has been in place as long as juvenile sex offender classification has existed in Ohio, which is since 2002. Now, this case concerns discretionary registrants and the timing of their classification hearing if one occurs. And so the certified question to be answered is, if a court commits a child to a secure facility, does the statute 2152-83-B1 permit the court to conduct that classification hearing at the time of disposition? The answer must be no, based on the plain meaning of the timing provision in this statute. And so I want to talk about this timing provision. I think it makes sense to explain it in the context of how it works for older kids. So 2152-83, bless you, A1, concerns mandatory registrants, and that is kids who were 16 or 17 at the time they committed their offense. And so for these kids, the plain words provide that the court shall issue an order as part of the disposition hearing, or shall issue that order upon release for a child committed to a secure facility. And so the shall means for older kids that the court has no discretion in the question as to whether. So the timing provision in A1 and the timing provision in B1 are the same. And in both sections contain this or, comma, if. And so the or if creates an alternate conditions, each of which is modified by either the mandatory language or the discretionary language. So these alternate conditions are created by the words in the statute. Because the timing provision is the same and this conditional alternatives are the same in both statutes, then the only thing different between A1 and B1 is whether it's mandatory or discretionary. So this is also sort of cemented in B2 of 2152-83. And B2 provides that there should be a hearing for kids who are the discretionary registrant. And it means that younger kids who are committed to a secure facility, the court is supposed to consider the effect of the disposition and any treatment provided for the child committed to a secure facility. Only then can the court have this hearing for a child committed to a secure facility. Because these timing provision is plain and unambiguous, Ian asked this court to answer the question in the negative and hold that the word may relates to discretion, the whether, not when, and if the court commits the child to a secure facility, the classification hearing, if any is to exist, must wait until the child's release. If there are no questions, I'm going to reserve the remainder of my time.
Counsel, I guess I do have a question procedurally. Is it your position that once a classification is made at the dispositional hearing, rightfully or wrongfully, can there be a different classification on discharge?
Well, discharge means off papers altogether.
Well, release from the secure facility.
Okay, so release from a secure facility is upon release in the statute. And the answer has to be no, because if the legislature intended for there to be two hearings, one at disposition like Ian had, and one on upon release, then the legislature would have used the phrase "and if," which creates additional conditions, not "or if," which creates alternate conditions.
So your position is that once the disposition or the classification is made on entry, it is a lifetime classification?
Well, it can be revisited under 2152-84, which provides for a classification on discharge, which is at the end of the disposition, discharge from parole usually or probation. And then that decision can be revisited thereafter under 2152-85. Okay. 83 doesn't provide for a revisiting of the decision and doesn't provide an opportunity for an additional hearing when the statutes provide for only one hearing.
But your position today is that if a classification is made at disposition, they cannot make a classification on discharge from the facility.
Oh, I see what you're saying, and I'm sorry. I think that if Ian were still not yet upon release from a secure facility, sure they could. Sure, because the timing provision is substantive. So what I mean is, so the court was without authority to classify Ian at disposition. And so that decision is vacated. It must be vacated. Whether the court can then conduct a hearing depends upon whether the child in the court is still within the timing provision in the statute, which is substantive.
Can I just clarify something that you said there at the end? If we're looking at the certified question, let's assume for the moment that we disagree with you on the certified question, and we answer it in the affirmative, and we say, yes, the court has the authority to classify Ian at the time of disposition. It would still be your position, though, that you only get one shot, that the court can't also classify him at the time of release.
Right, and that's because the word or, not the legislature didn't write the word and. Now, that's not to say that this decision couldn't be revisited. It has to be revisited.
The statute.
Sure.
Right, the separate statute.
Right. I mean, there's no opportunity, and I think that's the harm for a kid who's improperly classified at disposition, and it would be the harm under your scenario for a kid who's properly classified at disposition on his way in, and that is there is no mechanism, as the juvenile court judge in this court believed there was, and as the state believes today, as the second district believes, there is no mechanism to allow the court to do it again. And so instead of a carrot and stick system, then you have a stick carrot and stick system. And that's not what the legislature did when it wrote these words.
Okay, thank you.
Counsel, what would be the benefit for a court to have the classification hearing immediately upon disposition? Why do that?
I think that, and I don't know, because I think a court is supposed to follow the law, to be honest. But
pardon me?
I said I don't know, because I think the court is supposed to follow the law, and I don't.
Presumably, the judge thought he was, or she was following the law. So what is the reason, when it's a classification that affects a child upon release, not while they're in the institution?
Right.
So
right.
I'm curious as to what would be the rationale.
I think the rationale is difficult for me to imagine, but I can imagine it now having read the transcript in this case. I think that the court was misapprehended about what these things mean, but given that misapprehension, the court believed that giving the kid a harsh classification provided an incentive, and that's the stick, and then the carrot.
And was it explained to him, you're going to be classified in this manner for the rest of your life, or however it's phrased? But you can earn your way out of it?
That is what was explained to the child, I think, inappropriately. And it was sort of what Justice O'Neill was talking about. The way the court explained how this statute works is, you're going to get your classification now, and it's bad. You have an incentive to work this off. Upon your release, I'll look at you again. And if you've earned your way, then we'll lower it then.
And you say upon his release, they can't look at it again.
There's no provision to do that. There can be only one initial hearing, and for a child committed to a secure facility, the only look is upon the child's release.
Upon the child's release?
From a secure facility.
From the secure...
Right.
So you're saying there's no additional upon the child's release. You're saying that if the judge puts it in place upon disposition, that is the only classification that will follow that delinquent child throughout his period in the institution and upon release and discharge.
Upon release and discharge, and then at discharge 84 kicks in, and there's a mandatory review. But yes, and that's...
And when's that mandatory review?
Upon discharge from the juvenile court disposition, which is usually off parole.
Okay, so that's sometime before or on 21.
Right, yeah, when they're finished.
So there is another opportunity to reclassify that child.
Sure, yeah. But I think what What the court thought and what the state is advancing is that you get the initial, then you get a revisit upon your release, which again, the or doesn't allow that to happen. Then you get a revisit upon discharge, and then thereafter, three years out, five years out.
Well, you do still get the reviews 3 years out.
Sure.
Yeah, you're right. Going to get that regardless of when your disposition or when your classification was attached. But, you know, theoretically what you can say is happening here is that, say, from the age of 14 to if the child is discharged at 18, mm-hmm. all right, they're going to have that heightened classification. And the judge then conducts a hearing again for a class, can do a classification hearing upon release from the juvenile authority at 18 and lower it for the child or dissolve the classification, correct?
Well, no, and I just want to be careful to use the same terms. Release means release from facility, discharge means discharge from parole, end of disposition.
Okay, so I'm saying discharge. That's the juncture I'm talking
right.
about here.
And I guess what
the court can have a hearing at the discharge.
Always under 84.
Exactly.
Right.
And so the court can modify the classification at that juncture.
Mm-hmm. So I think I'm not making a sky is falling, the world is falling apart argument.
That was what I was
right.
getting to. Where's your problem here?
Okay, so the problem is for a kid like Ian, who is classified based on his offense, and remember, his offense was bad. It's very similar to what his father did to him, so not shocking in that respect. So his offense is bad. The court wants to make sure there's a classification in place. If he does fantastically well in treatment, as the vast majority of children do, the statistics tell us that very clearly, he comes out at 16 and is on parole. And so because there's no revisit until the end of right. disposition, he's registering in the community as a tier 3. So where's his carrot? It doesn't come until he's off papers, and that's after he's already been registering.
Well,
that's
I guess maybe the disagreement might be, where's the harm in having someone for 2 years be, while they're on paper, especially given the nature of this crime, that closely monitored, that closely attended to by the authorities?
Well, the harm is, first of all, the court explained it to him in a way that would lead him to believe that he would get that second look, his carrot, upon release. And the statute just doesn't provide for that. That's the plain meaning of the statute. So there's the harm, is in this court overreaching and interpreting the statute in a way that it's not written. The other harm is that we know that children need sort of immediate gratification, and they learn best when they're told something and then that happens immediately after they do the thing they were asked to do. But in the scenario,
in this situation, this is certainly a condition or a problem that time will tell the success. It's not, you know, you spend X amount of months in DYS and you're going to get your treatment, and then all's right with the world upon a discharge, a release from the institution. This is a very serious behavior that time will tell whether the counseling and the treatment, et cetera.
Right, and it's interesting you say that, because that's exactly what the legislature understood in writing this. For kids who are released into the community at disposition, yeah, we need to see if time will tell. For kids in a secure facility, they don't have any duty to register while sequestered.
Right.
And what's neat about the way this statute's written is time will tell before the court makes its decision. And so the kid gets the benefit of treatment just like the 16 and 17-year-olds do. And the time has already told us how he's going to respond to treatment. So then the court can make the right decision at the appropriate time based upon the information available at that time. In order for this court to hold what Your Honor is suggesting, it would have to write a law that says, or an interpretation of the statute that says, we treat 14 and 15-year-olds differently than 16 and 17-year-olds. And that is, 16 and 17-year-olds are going to get the benefit of their treatment in your example, mm-hmm. but 14 and 15-year-olds, they don't get the benefit of that treatment, because what's the harm? that doesn't make any sense when the timing provision is exactly the same in both sections.
Thank you. Mr. French.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court. One proposition that the state would agree with appellant on is that the statute in question, 2152.83b1, is clear and unambiguous. Where we disagree, of course, is on what that interpretation is. We support the Second District's conclusion. We believe that it is the right conclusion, which is that the statute clearly and unambiguously provides the juvenile court with the full discretion to do two things: to determine whether to hold a hearing and classify a juvenile sex offender, a juvenile registrant offender, and to determine when to hold that hearing. That is a clear and unambiguous reading of the statute.
Counsel, do you agree with your opposing counsel, therefore, if there is a classification at disposition, that the court is precluded from doing a classification when the child is released from the secure facility?
I would not agree with that. And in the Second District's opinion below, it did not agree with that as well. What the Second District found, and which I believe is a correct interpretation of the statute, the court can decide not to have the hearing at all, can decide to have the hearing at disposition, can decide to have the hearing upon the juvenile's release from a secured facility, or could decide to have a hearing at both occasions.
Why, if we can stay on that point for a second, then why would the General Assembly have used the word or? Why wouldn't it have said and or may and also may? Why use the word or there?
I would perhaps agree that the statute is not as artfully written as it could.
Does that mean it's ambiguous?
It is clear. It could be clearer. But I don't believe that not including that extra and necessarily removes the argument that the statute says on the court's own motion, it may at the time of disposition or upon the juvenile's release from the institution hold this hearing. It could do it at disposition or it could do it at the time of their release. They are not necessarily mutually exclusive. They could, the statute would allow them to do them at both occasions. And doing it on both occasions would advance the argument that appellant is making, that the juvenile should be allowed to receive the benefit of treatment, receive the benefit of counseling, and then have the opportunity to have his classification, if one has already been made at disposition, have it reevaluated and reclassified.
So you're advocating the best resolution of this case from your standpoint is that we interpret it so both words are there, right? That they can do. The judge can do it twice.
The judge has the option to do it twice.
Only twice, not three times? Disposition, release, or excuse me, classification upon disposition, upon release, and then upon discharge.
Upon discharge, yes. That is a separate, that is would be a permissible not permissible.
I think you
would
both
be,
agree
would
that
be
discharge, you can have a hearing at discharge.
The court is required, in fact, to hold another reclassification hearing at discharge.
So our only argument or disagreement is whether you can do one initially at disposition.
At disposition, yes.
Okay.
And much of the defendant, much of appellant's argument seems to be premised upon the assumption that this juvenile is automatically going to be committed to a secured facility. This is not, there is no provision under the juvenile law that would require, regardless of how heinous this crime is, regardless of the circumstances, regardless of how many prior adjudications this juvenile may have, there is no requirement that the juvenile court send a juvenile adjudicated for rape to a secured facility.
But counsel, that's the problem. We're here on a certified question today.
Yes.
So it presupposes they are going to a secure facility, correct? And I guess before we get too far down the road beating up on the General Assembly for inartfully drafting things, it doesn't seem to me that the certified question actually asks the question we're talking about today. For example, you are now saying that they can do it twice, but that's not what the certified question is asking.
That is, well, that is correct. The certified question is if—
Can they do a classification at disposition? That's all the question asks.
Yes, and clearly they can under the statute. So I would agree, in its most simplest form, the certified question must be answered yes. There really is no other reading of the statute.
Right. But you're advocating that we answer more than the certified
right.
question.
You want more than yes.
Well, I'm not necessarily advocating more than yes. I am indicating that the answer is not only yes, they can do it at disposition, but they can do it at disposition and at release from the
secure
facility.
So you want us to write that yes, they can do it at disposition, and that does not prohibit them from doing it on discharge from the secure facility or release. I get those words mixed up, discharge,
yes.
release. When they let them out of the big
out
house.
Out of the secured facility, yes. It could be answered both ways, yes. If it were this court's prerogative to go beyond simply answering the certified question to perhaps address what may then become the next question before this court,
right.
yes, the court would have that prerogative, and if it chose to exercise it, the answer would be yes, they could do it at both times. And under the statute, it makes sense that the desire of the General Assembly was to give the juvenile courts as much discretion as possible when dealing with 14 and 15-year-olds, the most discretion possible to not only hold the classification hearing for the purposes of protecting the public as the classification system is designed, but then to also give the court the discretion to reevaluate that and to take into consideration as the B2 section allows, to give the court the opportunity to reassess the initial classification based upon the effectiveness of the disposition and any treatment he may receive in the secured facility, which he doesn't necessarily have to go to a secured facility in the first place.
Does the individual have to be classified before receiving treatment in the facility?
I don't know the definitive answer to that.
The classification system is in the nature of another type of punishment, in a sense, the notification,
yes.
This follows the child for a long period of time. We know that. And I'm just trying to understand the position of the parties here when we're talking about timing and how many classifications and so on. Yeah, your position would sweep more children into the classification system by allowing for the early classification at the time of the disposition,
yes.
and then another potential classification at the time of the release from the facility, correct?
Correct.
Okay, where the defense counsel here is talking one or the other, not both, right?
That would be the distinction between our two arguments. Mm-hmm. Yes, Your Honor.
Unless but just to clarify, the trial court could also decide not to do one at all, mm-hmm. correct?
Correct.
And so the only hearing would be at discharge. Or there would not be one at discharge because there had not been a classification, is that right?
The 2152-84, mm-hmm. which talks about the hearing upon termination or discharge, presupposes that there has already been a prior classification. It is a reclassification hearing. If there has never been a classification to begin with, because it's purely discretionary for 14 and 15-year-olds, then that hearing would not take place because there would be no prior classification to evaluate.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Which, again, reinforces the notion that the statute was written to give the juvenile court the greatest amount of discretion and leniency in classifying this age group of juveniles.
Can you clarify that? We're talking about 3 points where there can be classification here. Did I just hear you say that you wouldn't have a second and third opportunity if you didn't do it the first time?
Under 2152-84A1, which provides that the court that has issued a previous order under 82A or 82B upon completion of the disposition shall conduct the hearing to review the prior classification. So if there was not an initial classification either at the time of disposition or at the time of release from the secured facility under 2152-83, then there would not be a reclassification hearing under 84.
Okay, so you could, if the court passes on one and passes on two, there's no three. That's what you're saying.
That is correct. Yes.
And the argument, obviously, is that there's only one opportunity to do. That's what, you know, opposing counsel is saying, and it can't be done at the dispositional, correct?
That is their position,
okay.
Correct.
5285 says, regardless of when the delinquent child was classified a juvenile offender registrant, what does that mean if there's not more than one opportunity for that classification to attach?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, that's under what?
85, the petition for reclassification or declassification. It's what's done at the discharge. Correct?
85 would give the juvenile the opportunity
to petition.
And there's a certain time, at certain points in time, would give the juvenile an opportunity to seek reclassification or declassification if a prior classification has been made. Now, if the juvenile was never classified to begin with, then there would be no need for the juvenile to take advantage of 85
Correct.
To seek a reclassification.
And this reclassification is not just for period of time prior to discharge. It's subsequent to discharge. Is 2152-85 related to subsequent to discharge?
Subsequent from discharge from all juvenile.
Yes.
Yes.
That's what that's for.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
I don't have the full statute in front of me. My recollection is that statute could take advantage of that during the dispositional period or after discharge.
Okay.
Because based upon the tier classification, the juvenile's obligation to register will more than likely extend well beyond their 21st birthday. So that 85 would give them the opportunity to seek a reclassification.
I understand. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Powell, you may take 30 seconds.
Counsel, would you declare victory if we were to misinterpret the statute in the way the prosecutor asked us to misinterpret it?
I would not, and I don't think the citizens of this great state would either. And I also note that the so-called new kids on this court spoke just as recently as yesterday on this point. And I think you hit it earlier, Your Honor. In order to have the state declare victory, I suppose, this court would have to use words that don't exist and don't exist in the A of the statute. Now, I think I get what you're saying is it would provide sort of more benefit to kids, sure, if we believe this stick, carrot, stick works. But I think in the interest of what this court does and how the law works, that doesn't make any sense. We have to interpret it. This court must look at these words as they're written. And again, this is pretty basic fourth grade English in terms of conditional sentences and alternate conditions, not additional conditions. I think in Willen, this court said that a mere possibility of a clearer drafting of the statute won't defeat the most natural reading of this statute. Just because the word shall exists in A1, courts have universally interpreted that statute in the most natural reading of the statute. It should be no different here, because remember, the may refers to whether, not when, just as the shall refers to whether, not when. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decisions.